Welcome to the serial audiobook Alone, an unabridged podcast of Book 3 of the Generations trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. This novel is available in print as an ebook or as a full-length unabridged audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alone. Hello, junkies! Hey, shush. Some very fun news for you. We are so close to announcing the publishing and pre-order dates for the Earth Core paperback. 10 years in the making, 577 girthy pages. I posted a peek at the wraparound cover designed by one Scott E. Pond. It's over at instagram.com/ScottSigler. And of course, facebook.com/ScottSigler. You know, if you followed me at those places, you would already know such things. Your mother and I are very, very disappointed in you. We don't quite have the publication date yet for Earth Core, not for your parents being disappointed in you, but they are. But we will soon have that information. And when we do, we should have the pre-order, and then, holy shit balls, we're going to have some fun. The pre-order will be for hand-signed copies. By moi, we will be shipping them out from here at Empty Set Entertainment. We will let you know when all of that information is available. If you want to make sure you get it, follow me at Instagram or Facebook, or go to scottsigler.com, sign up for a newsletter. It's in the upper right-hand corner. We'll send you out all the info. Also, other super cool news. If you happen to be a fan of Pierce Brown and his Red Rising series, I was honored to interview him at Mysterious Galaxy Books on the launch day of his brand new fourth novel, Iron Gold. Iron Gold is the start of a new trilogy in the Red Rising universe. I've talked about him many times on the show, and I am about, six chapters into Iron Gold, and it's really, really, really good. So if you dig Pierce, and you dig me, or you wouldn't be listening to this, we recorded that interview and have it up as an episode for Story Smack Podcast. You can find that at scottsigler.com/podcast/Iron Gold, or at facebook.com/Story Smack. It'll be right there. So let me get you caught up on Alone, and then what we're going to do is kill us some Martians. Previously on Alone, the orbital attacks and the fighting in the streets have killed birthday children and Springers alike. It's time to say goodbye to these brave souls, as it is time to say goodbye to Brewer, whose long life has finally come to an end. The antenna is up. And at long last, Em can finally contact Zolittle. When she calls that ship, will it be Matilda who answers? Find out next on Alone, episode number 15.
We gather around a crater to say goodbye once again. It's a bigger crater than last time, because we have more bodies. 3 rows of them this time. In all, we have 72 dead. 8 young circle stars, 9 circles, 51 Springers, lined up shoulder to shoulder in no particular order. Brewer lies at the center of the middle row. Coal black, withered and gnarled, he's flanked on one side by a circle star boy of 13, and on the other by a Springer missing part of her head. The Malbinti usually bury their dead, but not this time. Barca insisted his soldiers fell fighting for Ukmal, so they should be memorialized as people from Ukmal are. They fought together. They died together. They will burn together. It's a touching sentiment, further cementing the bonds between his people and mine. Humans and Springers line the crater's edge. Barca already gave his speech. Now Waelizak is giving hers, the ceremonial funeral torch held high. I wonder how many more of these mass burials we'll have. Considering there are only 249 birthday children left, there won't be that many before we're all gone. So we say goodbye, Waelizak says. and we say thank you for being part of our lives. This time I don't miss my cue, but I no longer give a damn about words that came from some meaningless religion. With everyone watching, I walk to Waylazak and take the torch from her hand. You will not be forgotten, I say. Those responsible for your deaths will pay. I swear it. I toss the torch into the crater. Flames catch instantly, a woof that engulfs the corpses as one. Borjigin seems to have his accelerants under control. That's good, at least. We need every weapon we can get. The dragon has again vanished beyond the horizon. Bishop is in charge of redistributing our troops, filling in gaps left by casualties. Borjigin is repairing our spiders. Opkick is distributing ammunition, and so on. It's a team effort, really. Except that right now, the effort doesn't involve me. I sit in my room in the observatory, sharpening my spear. I'm waiting for Pyrrha to come get me. The Zolotl is in range again. He assured me that it won't be long until he makes contact. Right now, I want to be alone. I need a few minutes to think about our situation. My personal things were destroyed when my home collapsed. This room contains a straw mattress made by the Springers, one extra pair of boots, two extra black coveralls, and my weapons. We are at war. What other possessions do I need? Just one. The white pedestal that stands in the corner, waiting to be activated. I run the sharpening stone along the blade, as Coyote once showed me. The sound of stone on metal is comforting. This is something I can control. I miss Coyote. I miss so many people. The Wasps launched 6 landing craft. Each one held 666 enemy soldiers, an invading army of almost 4,000. Half of them died when their ships were shot down by tower cannons or the observatory's anti-missile defenses. 2 craft landed successfully. 1 crash-landed. Schuster counted a total of 1,612 alien troops that made it out of those ships. We killed them all. Bishop and Farrar are raving that we only lost 71 soldiers, are elated about a kill ratio of almost 23-1. They're sad for our losses, of course, but at their core they're built for war. They accept that every battle brings casualties, which is part of why I want to be alone. The fact that Bishop is excited about our major victory, as he calls it, disgusts me. The battle had an effect I didn't see coming. My people seem much calmer. The tension and the increased need for violence have eased away. That in itself disturbs me, as if our need for blood is quenched. For now, anyway. I have a feeling the need will build up again, and soon. I need answers. Brewer is gone. I must get those answers from someone else. From someone I never wanted to speak to again. A knock on my door. Come in. The door opens. Pyrrha enters. His lips are horribly chapped. He's been chewing on them, a nervous tic. Poor kid is a wreck.
The Zolotl is in range, he says.
I stand. I think of putting the spear in a corner, but change my mind. For this conversation, I'd rather hold it.
Connect me, I say.
We step to the pedestal. He waves his hands over the flat top. Glowing symbols appear. He moves them, turns them, then steps back. His hands grip each other. Squeeze so hard the fingers look bleach white.
It's ready, he says. Just tap the pedestal and it will call the Zolotl. I don't know who will answer or if anyone will answer Dahl. Do you want me to stay and make sure it works? No, stand in the hallway, please. Close enough I can call you if I need you.
He leaves, closes the door behind himself. I tap the pedestal. Sparkles of color flare to life, a glimmering, shining cloud that appears out of nowhere. The sparkles immediately coalesce into a gray shape that darkens, then turns black. It is the head and shoulders of a grown-up. A grown-up with one eye. Matilda.
Thank the gods,
she says.
You're still intact.
Genuine relief in her voice, but those words, not you're alive, but rather you're intact. To her, I am not a person. I am an object, a vessel to be filled. Her good eye whirls with intensity, with blatant hunger for my mind, my body, my life. The other eye is covered behind a hard, shiny piece of white plastic. That's the eye I ruined when we fought. The very sight of her makes my skin crawl. Yes, I'm intact, no thanks to you. You fled when the goblin came close. You're the same coward as you always have been.
Oh, please,
Matilda says.
Our ship has already been through one battle, darling dear, which was one too many. Or did you think the vessel that brought those hopping vermin simply dropped them off and then flew away?
That explains why we've never seen any sign of a Springer mothership. The grown-ups must have destroyed it about the time they bombed the Springer city. So you can't help us, I say. You can't help defend this planet you've spent your too long life pursuing?
We're trying to build a tanker ship. If we can deliver fuel to the shuttle, you can come up here, out of danger.
The laugh that escapes me sounds like that of an insane woman. Out of danger! How in hell's name do you think me walking into the viper's nest, coming to you, puts me out of danger? You, who sent a senile old man to do your dirty work, want me to come up there and what? Trust you? She waves a hand, dismissing my words.
Brewer doesn't have a receptacle, and now his brain is rotting away. He's useless.
And now he's gone. She pauses.
Brewer is dead?
He is, I say. Natural causes. She sent him here, knowing his days were numbered, but his passing seems to catch her unawares, as if reality suddenly doesn't match how she thought she'd feel.
It's irrelevant,
Matilda says.
He's lucky that I gave him a final way to serve and didn't have someone slice his throat.
I feel a mad grin spread across my face. You would have someone else do it, because you've never done your own dirty work, right? You don't know what it's like to put that knife in, to twist it, to watch someone die at your hand. Her spindly fingers curl into a shaking fist.
Who do you think you are? I made you. You are nothing. You don't exist. Did you take my body out to fight the invaders?
I lean close to her image, so close that if we were actually face to face, the spit of my scream would splatter against her good eye and plastic patch both.
You're God's damned right I did. I led my people. I'm willing to die for them if need be, unlike you, you sniveling coward.
Her twisted knot of a fist becomes a frail finger aimed at my face, jabs out and hits my forehead in splashes of multicolored sparkles.
You put my perfect body at risk defeating that little token force. I've waited 12 centuries for that body, you horrible little worthless bitch.
Matilda vibrates like a leaf on a tree. Spit hangs from her mouth folds. Her one red eye blazes so bright it lights up the gnarled black skin around it. I was just as furious as she was, but my fury was blasted clean away by two words. Token force? What does that mean? She leans back. She wipes the wetness from her mouth folds. The glow of her eye returns to normal.
It means the ships that landed in Ukmal were a diversion, you stupid infant. They screened your radio telescopes from seeing the real force, which they landed a few hundred kilometers to the northeast, well beyond the ruins of the Vermin City.
She's lying. She has to be. We won. But during the battle, the other rockets I heard, I thought those were an echo.
They were not,
Matilda says.
There's some kind of interference coming from our Myokin that is screwing with our sensors, so we don't have exact numbers. But Gaston thinks at least 20 troop transports landed.
Gaston. Her Gaston. The one she fled the planet with. Wait, 20? No, it would be 21. Another goddamn multiple of 3. I know it. And if those troop ships are the same size as the ones that landed in our streets, that would be a force of 14,000. The words leak out of me, little more than a whine of escaping air. They landed 14,000 troops?
So it appears,
Matilda says. Why didn't they just land with the others? Those numbers would have overwhelmed us.
Because they didn't know what your defenses were,
Matilda says.
Basic strategy, darling dear. Send a probing force to find out what your enemy has and how they will react.
I think of the wasps we fought in the streets of Ukmal. Even when outnumbered and outgunned, they didn't run for cover. They fought hard, yes, but they fought like they knew they were going to die. Their behavior now makes sense. They were on a suicide mission. They were a sacrifice to hold our attention, to tie us up and keep us from seeing the real threat. Now that threat is safely on Omayokin. Even with Barkha's army, we're outnumbered 5-1. The wasps have better weapons, better armor. How can we possibly defeat them? Tell me where they are, I say.
Why? So you can go get my body destroyed? I don't think so. And I couldn't tell you if I wanted to. We detected their launch and were able to roughly extrapolate their landing area, but that is all. Thanks to that interference, we can't see anything on the planet. We don't know where the bastards are.
We need to find the wasps and find them now. We have to gather information on our enemy. I can send Maria. No, I'll go with her. I have to see for myself what we face. I will do that. But I don't know when I might talk to Matilda again. There are things I must know. Tell me why you came here, I say. The church, all of you, Dad, Mom, why did people come here?
Didn't you ask Brewer?
I'm asking you. Just tell me. Give me this one thing. She stares at me. A gnarled hand reaches up, lifts the hard eye patch, and tosses it away. She's going to tell me, but the price is looking at what I've done to her, at the ragged hole where her eye used to be.
We came because of the Founder's prophecy, she says. I met her once. Do you remember that?
I shake my head.
The first time I entered the Mictlan compound, I didn't speak to her. I only saw her. As ancient as she was just mesmerizing. So much power. The Founder heard the call from Tlaloc, then built the church up from nothing.
That name again, Tlaloc. Is it a real thing? The call for what? I ask. To come to Omayokan?
That and so much more. The call foretold the Abernesia invasion, gave us the location of Omayokan and the schematics for the Ark that would take us there.
Wait, she said schematics. That word means plans, blueprints. The Zolotl, the church didn't design it?
A ship jump between galaxies, darling dear, beyond any technology known to man. Only the word of the gods could bring such a miracle.
I thought the gods were made up, but something sent a call across the universe, a call that drew my people here. Did that call radiate out from Omayokan like the signals from our radio telescope? If so, that signal spread equally in all directions. It must have hit other races. The call contained schematics, which is why all the ships look the same. My tongue feels swollen. My stomach roils. Humans were called here. So were other races. Called here by something on this planet. The alien ships look exactly like the Zolotl, I say. Is that what the Springer ship looked like? Matilda nods. Religion brought us here. Did religion bring the other races as well? Do the ships orbiting our planet have their own founders, who sent thousands of their kind to fight and die? That call your church is based upon? The call wasn't just for humans, I say. The other races heard it too. That's why all the ships look the same. Matilda laughs.
Did you figure that out for yourself, darling dear? As the Founder foretold, paradise is promised, but never given. Paradise must be earned with blood and sacrifice.
She knew this was a planet of endless war. When did she learn this? Before the Zolotl departed, or at some point during the journey? Did Brewer know? Did all the grown-ups? There is so much more to learn, but I'm wasting time. Somewhere in the jungle, our enemy gathers. I have to leave, I say. I'm giving orders that none of my people are to talk to you or anyone else on the Zolotl. I don't trust you, Matilda.
Don't go in the jungle, she says. Please, M, don't go out there.
Now she uses my name? I have to go. That's what a leader does. Matilda shakes her head.
We might be able to send fuel down to you in 6 days. Just don't. You can't. Oh.
Her image is fuzzing out in bursts of colored static.
They're trying,
she says. Then her image puffs away. Did something go wrong with the broadcast? The air above the pedestal again flares to life. But it's not Matilda. It's a man. Not a blackened, gnarled grown-up. An adult man. Older than me, yes. But the way we're supposed to get old. His image crystallizes. His smile is one of pure joy, total amazement.
I can't believe it, he says. It's you.
His long black hair is tied up in a topknot. I see a few strands of gray in there. Small wrinkles line his eyes. Something comforting about looking at his face. He wears a blue robe tied over one shoulder, simple but clean, with folds that seem very precise. The word toga pops into my head. Around his neck hangs a thin steel necklace dotted with bits of colored glass.
"It's you,"
he says again, laughing. "You know me?"
"Well, I know of you. Victor was right. I can't believe it. You're Matilda Savage."
He says her name with reverence. I am not her, and I will never be her. But I can explain that later, if there is a later. "And who are you?"
"My name is Marcus."
He pauses, looks down. I see his hands. He's counting on his fingertips. I hear him mumbling something over and over.
"Eight, eight, eight, eight."
No, he's not saying eight. He's saying great.
"I think I need maybe 35 greats," he says. "Hard to say for sure."
He smiles warm and wide.
"I'm Marcus Savage, your great, 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 and then some grandson."
Well, how about them apples? M has family after all. That was Alone, episode number 15. Is that her grandson? Or is it Matilda's grandson? If M would have become Matilda, is that still family? These are some deep, deep questions. And we will find out next week more about it in Alone, episode number 16. Until then, junkies, I will talk to y'all real soon. You have been listening to Alone, Book 3 in the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. Produced by Scott Sigler and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is at Scott Sigler, S-C-O-T-T-S-I-G-L-E-R, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/Scott Sigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.